Hello and welcome to Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today I'm super excited to be talking to Bex Armstrong. Bex is general partner and COO at Super Capital Partners, which is a Series A fund helping ventures go global. Bex is a career COO with a reputation for helping companies take control of their ops while scaling at speed. And if that weren't enough, she also mentors founders through the Fast Forward London Pre-Accelerator Program and Women's Health Tech Hive. Welcome, Bex. Really great to have you here.
Thank you very much, Arish.
So, Bex, you and I have had a bit of a chat about your background, your journey. I think for our listeners, it'd be really, really interesting to kind of hear how you went from country town Australian girl through to venture, you know, COO at Scaling Ops and now investor. I'd love to understand kind of how you walked along that path, the kind of glass ceilings you smashed along the way and how you got to where you are today.
Might be a bit of a story because I'm old. So I grew up in a country town, Wagga Wagga. And it's halfway between Sydney and Melbourne in inland New South Wales. I left very young. At 15, I did a year's exchange student to Holland. And I think that is where I first learned how to stand on my own two feet. At 15 and 3 months, I really was sort of left by myself in a country that I didn't understand the language. Happily, they all speak very good English, but I really was taught how to stand up for myself, look after myself, and just, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. So from there, I have got a really diverse background. As you kind of mentioned, I went and did a diploma of hospitality in Canberra, and I was the first girl at the Hyatt Hotel in Canberra to be the concierge. So I was allowed to drive the cars and things. So I probably started smashing ceilings, even silly as they are, very young, I would say. So I did hospitality. I went to university to do health science where I became an acupuncturist. It was the same degree as the nurses, but we did 4 years instead of three. Became a women's health specialist. Along the way, I was the lead of the injecting in the needle exchange for injecting drug users for pharmacies. So I went in and piloted the New South Wales Southeast Area Health Service pilot for people who choose to inject drugs having free needles in pharmacies, which was subsequently taken over by the Pharmacy Guild of New South Wales. So, yeah, so I've always done things that are uncomfortable and tried to not let anybody say no. I think that's probably the best. So after being in Australia, I launched and sold an event management company for acupuncturists. I built a client base for my acupuncture, for women's health, which I sold when we came over to Australia. I'm also a doula, so I had all my babies back in Australia. I'm still a doula today, so I still manage an occasional birth. I try and do at least one a year to keep my hand in. And then coming to the UK, everything changed. I had to try and figure out a whole new person because I didn't want to do acupuncture anymore. I didn't know who I was. And I applied for jobs that were, I'm somebody that can do anything and I'll give anything a crack. And I was very lucky to have some very younger than me, fantastic entrepreneurs that took me on. And they literally said in the interview, we don't know what job you're going to do, but we want you on board. We'll probably give you HR because you seem like you've had every job. And they did that. And I was 3 months in HR. Then I was 3 months in research director because I've got statistics from my degree. And while doing that job, I realized that I'm very, very good at templates and pathways and KPIs. And that's how I got into operations. So they put me into operations. Then I went to global operations and then it just snowballed from there. So, and that's up until a few years ago. I mean, it's...
I was going to say that was just your early 20s for sure. I mean, that was really interesting. You said you didn't know who you were. It strikes me that you probably absolutely knew exactly who you were, which is sounds like someone who's just interested in such a huge kind of range of things. And as you say, can basically, you know, put their hand to anything. I wasn't even aware of the doula side of that, but that's just an incredible passion to have had. So as you were on this kind of journey of operating within ventures, like what were the major challenges you were facing? What were the kind of things that really, really became difficult or, you know, that you had to overcome? I guess, you know, for a lot of our listeners who are potentially, you know, building their first business or building, you know, building a venture, operations tend to be kind of the really, really hard bit that no one wants to talk about, which is why they bring in people like you, I guess. But yeah, it'd be great to understand what the biggest challenges you faced were.
I think the biggest challenges for me is you have to be okay with being the bad guy, because you're at the end of the day, the one that has to say no. You can't have the credit card over the bar. The main thing I would say is when you've got money, it's very easy to burn unnecessary or frivolous things that aren't going to actually extend your runway. So things like making sure that you have strong KPIs that everybody believes in and really work hard to clarify what that means and what success looks like, and then sticking to them. It's actually really, really hard as an entrepreneur who's curious about everything, which most of the founders that I've ever worked with are, to stick to something even for 3 months. So you just see the best new thing, you want to do that. You see another avenue or a customer says you should do this. You've got to stick to that or you've got to change course. So it's really hard to keep people's feet to the flame to say, okay, we're all running at capacity. If you want to do that thing, what has to come out for you to be able to do that? Because it's all well and good for you to do it, but who's going to do it? And we don't have infinite money. We don't have infinite people. So that's the hardest bit of scaling, making sure you take people along for the ride, that you know exactly where you're headed and everybody is on board, because it's not always the case. And then saying no or having really difficult conversations around if-then scenarios in your planning. I'd say that they're kind of the hardest things an operator ever has to face. The governance is generally fine. HR is the other one. It's not nice to when things aren't going well. And unfortunately, that generally falls to the COO to have to deal with. So I've had to make people redundant. I've had to performance manage people. I've had to fire people for various reasons. But also, I've been able to get mentors for people, and I've been able to help them step up and given them ambitious goals to let them just fly. So it that bit kind of evens out over time. It's never nice to let anybody go for whatever reason, but it is nice to be able to see people doing amazing things. And I see now some of my people that I've worked with over the years, and they're absolutely flying, and it's just wonderful to watch.
That's incredible. I think what you said about founders, I mean, certainly resonates with me. I've worked with founders like that. I probably am slightly a founder like that as well.
Me too.
It's that endless curiosity, I think, that you need as a founder, right? But equally to your point, you know, you have to stick with the one thing, or at least, you know, a selection of one things maybe is a better way of putting it. And I think that's really difficult to do. I was also really kind of thinking about the fact that as you were talking, we previously had Jelaine Chan on the podcast, who I think you also know quite well. And we talked about the fact that for scaling operations or for startups, actually the best thing to do is to put structure in to help them scale. Whereas I think that's counterintuitive to a lot of people when they think about startups, because they think about them in terms of being very exploratory. What are your thoughts on that? Like, how early should people put process and structure into their ventures?
Early. I agree wholeheartedly with Jelaine. I love her. Without structure, you don't know where you're headed. If you're going to go and talk to an investor, you need to know where you're headed and how you're going to get there. And that starts early. One of the things that investors look at that you don't always realize is that they look at some of the governance. They look at the board meetings that you've had. If you've not had board meetings, it's a little mark against you. Can you set a target and achieve it? If you don't have that, how do you prove to an investor that you know how to set a target and achieve it? It's just little things, but those little things add up to de-risking for investors that you honor your word, that you know where you're headed, that you're ambitious, and that you're absolutely going to nail that target. So it's all about trust building. So I would say, you know, past ideation into the testing phase of just seeing if anybody actually wants this product, you need to put the structure in from there.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree with that. I think it's very easy to get caught in the trap of ever exploration. And, you know, I found myself now trying to figure out how to put structure into a couple of my ventures as well, which is not my strong suit, but we will get there. And just, you know, finally on kind of your journey within ops and operating within ventures, you know, what do you wish you knew now, or when you started out, that you do know now? I mean, what are the things that you kind of learned along the way that you were like, you know, aha moment, I wish I'd known that right at the beginning?
A really good question that I probably don't The main thing that I learned was something about myself and my resilience. I've got incredibly big shoulders, and not everybody has those shoulders. So when you get that Mike Tyson, as everybody has a plan till you get punched in the face, they are words to live by for me, because I'm the ultimate planner. And if things don't go to plan, you have to be able to think on your feet, and you have to be able to lick your wounds. And I guess part of my story, I ended it maybe a bit too soon. I am a female founder. I have got a mindfulness app for menopausal women. Menopause is something I'm a massive, passionate advocate for, people understanding and having education to make choices for them that make their life better. So I have that. I did go into the fundraising and walked away from funding 3 times because the deals weren't right. And then COVID hit for my final one. But I think if I'd known how hard it was, I probably wouldn't have done it. But the thing that I found out as a result of it is that I am massively resilient, and I've had to do things that I don't want to do. I've had to do things that, you know, I generally will try and put other people first. That's part of being a doula, is looking after somebody else before you look after yourself. But sometimes you have to advocate for people, and sometimes you have to let them figure it out for themselves. You can't do it for them. And that's something that I wish I'd known. And sometimes I wish I'd shut up a couple of times and let somebody else stand on their own 2 feet. So the lessons that I'm really good at making mistakes, and I'm really okay with making mistakes, but it's not everybody's journey. Some people are really good at following, and some people are really good at leading, and I'm really good at hopping in behind a leader and following them, making it go. I can do it myself, but I'm not really somebody that puts themselves out into the spotlight. So I don't need to be in front. I really like making other people's visions come to life.
I think that takes a huge amount of self-awareness to be able to accept that, to your point, you're not the person that wants to be in the spotlight, but you really like lifting others up. I think the other thing that I think is really important from what you said there is allowing other people to fall over, allowing them to fail. It's a bit like what we talk about with kids. You know, you've got to let them, you know, stand up, walk on their own 2 feet, fall over, get a bit of a graze, learn from that and carry on, because otherwise they don't grow up. But I think when you're working with ventures, especially when you're working with a lot of young people who maybe haven't been through the same experiences that maybe you and I have, it's even more important to be there for them when they do fall over, to help them understand that that's part of the learning process, rather than necessarily, you know, getting very, very sort of down in the dumps about what's happened. I think all of that is just incredible advice for anyone listening. I think all of those points resonate massively with me. I've no doubt that for others, they will as well. I wanted to move on now to talk a little bit about your kind of switch from operator to investor. So you've moved to the other side of the table. So give me an overview of Super Capital Partners. You know, what's the fund about? What are you looking for? What sort of ventures are you funding?
So Super Capital Partners, we're in the middle of fundraising. It's a growth fund. It's a fund that is built by entrepreneurs. So there's 3 GPs. Brendan Morrissey is Irish musician turned entrepreneur, and he's absolutely fantastic. He's a really interesting guy. Warwick Hill is ex-Microsoft Innovations. He used to run the Microsoft Innovation Accelerator, and he has years of experience of investing in accelerator and lifting people up in understanding sort of the differences that can be made inside of a company with where they take their eye off the ball. He's done some studies which have been really interesting about what happens with your growth trajectory if you have to go out funding, because you can take a while. And so they're both very, very interesting people. And then I'm the 3rd GP. So I'm the lucky one that comes and hopefully is going to lift everybody up. So I knew Warwick because I did a pitch for an investing evening to try and do the fundraise for Clarity, the tracker that I was trying to get funded for. I met him. I worked with him as a mentor. He kicked my butt like you would not believe it, and I still came back for more. It's like I seem to have a bit of a thing about, I like being pushed, and I like really, I can work really hard. I just need to know where I'm going. And he did that for me. And I kept in touch with him through COVID because I stopped doing the fundraise. I did a turnaround of the Jewish Museum in London, which was fantastic. And then, so Brendan and Warwick had known each other for a few years. I'd known Warwick for a while, And so he actually came and asked me to join them. But what the ethos is we're all entrepreneurs. We are all very different. So it's Irish, New Zealander, and an Australian. It sounds like we're going to walk into a pub. So the main thing is the companies that we get are all at growth stage. They have a really interesting, impacting, like world impacting or area impacting concept that has got IP and or trade secrets that are really going to make that disruption in the market kind of thing. But they're really working on something very, very different. And what we're basically doing is going to be a very different sort of VC fund where we do quite an intensive DD with them and go through all of the different, it's like 240 questions. It's ESG focused. So we're looking very much at how does it look? How should it look? And then trying to match up the two. And the companies that are coming through will get two tranches as a minimum. And with that, we set KPIs for commercialization KPIs as well as ESG KPIs. So if you want to get your next level of funding, you need to meet three, at minimum of three of the five sort of targets that we set for you to get the funding to kind of embed ESG and embed the commercialization practices that the investment committee has looked at through the DD and has figured out will actually help you. Because we've been on that side of the desk, we know what needs, what the different sort of knob twiddling, whatever you call that, what the different sort of changes need to be for you to be able to really ramp up. So hopefully we've got a very exciting offer for people.
As you were saying, 240 lines of due diligence, the CFO and me just shivered. it was quite an odd moment. So, I mean, I think that's incredible. But Series A is all about numbers. I mean, beyond the ESG and beyond the kind of the globally impactful or changing kind of nature of what you're looking for, you know, when you move from pre-rev or pre-seed or seed through to Series A and beyond is all about, okay, the traction, the metrics, the numbers. What are the kind of numbers that you guys really care about and why are those numbers important? What are those metrics that are super important for you guys?
It's a really interesting thing. I look at the governance so that you can achieve your metrics. This is where those coming back to those KPIs, we look at what your burn rate is. We look at what your management accounts look like. We look at all of the financials. We absolutely do. Some of the people are in different, just coming into revenue or at revenue, but they're, so we've got med tech people that are the same sort of money. It's growth. They're not at revenue yet. They're coming out of clinical trials. They're just about to hit revenue. So we've got different targets for the different areas that people are in that are set out. We definitely look at things like you're looking at the commercialization. So you're looking at, do you know how to set a weighted pipeline? Do you know how to set your pricings so to make sure that you're going to make enough money to be able to cover your overheads? Because people seem to, like, the pricing seems to be quite the skill, because a lot of times you're pricing, but you're nowhere near going to hit your overheads anytime soon. Part of the reason why you need some funding, but it's what have you got in the plans? So with your articulation of your product, can we test you out by putting you into some customers to see whether you sell in? So we're not looking at it like you need to have a monthly returning revenue of 20,000. That's not what our main objective is. Our main objective is looking at the company and seeing if it's massively disruptive. And we're looking usually at people that are just about to hit that global stage, going for FDA regulations. So we're not as specifically formulated in that you have to meet this number. It's looking at it in the round, which is why we do such a due diligence. So for instance, if you're looking at an enterprise product, have you got like your ISO 27002 compliance? Do you have a multi-tenanted system to make sure that you can use the different backends that the different enterprises have? So we're looking at probably different things that many other people wouldn't be looking at, because we're not just, the finances are very, very important and our CFO Ashley is amazing, but they're not the only thing that's going to make a big difference for our fund.
Yeah, I think I understand completely. It's about taking everything holistically. I think one of the things that people get very confused about is that they assume that there is some sort of formulaic or programmatic approach that one can take. And I think that takes away some of the potential, if you like, for excellence out of ventures, because you need to look beyond what is obvious to what isn't obvious to be able to kind of see where they might go. So I think it's really cool that you don't have that kind of formulaic approach. You know, one of the things that I think has come out of what you've been saying is that the three of you as GPs have a very hands-on approach. And I think there's been a shift in venture from, you know, VCs being quite hands-off, maybe. You know, there's the kind of meme about how can we help? But it sounds like you really want to help these ventures and, you know, not just fund them, but guide them, I think, through some of that. Would that be fair to say as well?
I think to a point, like the what I was saying before about learning to shut up, one of the things that I've learned in this is that we can show you a path you need to walk, decide whether you want to walk that path. Also, with that idea of a formulaic approach, how can you be disruptive if you're doing something that everybody else is doing? So I think if the more formulaic that it is, the less interest that we'll probably have in it. So I think it's a really good question. We're not going to do it for you. What we can do is say, as entrepreneurs, as business people, having seen this and done this a number of times, our advice would be to go this way. At the end of the day, the company has to create those KPIs off our recommendations, but they have to internally embed it, agree with it, plan for it, and execute on it. We can't do that for you. We can only sort of guide you along the way about where we think that we would do. I'm mentoring some guys at the moment that are amazing, really, really amazing. And I go in and I try and help them. We're setting up a board structure. We're setting up some KPIs. We had the board a couple of weeks ago and they've already busted their KPIs and they're not following them along. We can help, we can guide, but you've got to do it at the end of the day. So, and we're not perfect and we've all failed at different things throughout our time. So we're definitely not a cast in stone fund. It's just, we want you to succeed. We want all of you to succeed. And how can we do that for you? We'll introduce you to customers. We will give you a guideline of what you need to be able to get into an enterprise system. We will support you on your journey and find you people if you need them for mentoring. You know, so we help when needed, but we're not their parents. We're not there to do their job for them. We're just there for support. But I think the big difference, we know the journey. So we know what it's like. We know how lonely that journey can be and how sometimes you just need somebody to ring up and say, I need some help, and have them actually pick up the phone.
Yeah. I think for a lot of founders, again, they start off operating in isolation. Maybe they have a co-founder, maybe they don't. But one of the learnings I think that you get to quite early on is the quicker you surround yourself by great advisors, and not just kind of advisors in name only, but people who you can actually pick up the phone to and have a candid conversation. You know, I'm struggling. You know, we're going to find it tough to meet payroll. We didn't hit the numbers. How can we do this? How can we turn this around? Like, getting that kind of positive feedback is really, or constructive feedback, I should say, is really important as a founder because you are on your own, right?
Yeah. And it is a scary place when you can't make payroll. And if I had to figure out what to do when you can't make payroll, oh man, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a trigger.
Yeah, it's not fun. I think a lot of founders have probably been there and would never, ever, ever want to be there again, but probably will put themselves in situations where they may be. I just wanted to round off kind of the conversation with some thoughts from you on kind of where we're heading in terms of diversity within the ecosystem. You've clearly, you know, taken a really, really strong role in mentoring and lifting, I think, especially sort of female founders through Women's Health Tech Hive, through the, you know, through the various sort of businesses you founded yourself. And I assume also, you know, through the fund. So yeah, it'd be great to kind of understand how you think things have improved, if they have, you know, where we're going and, you know, what more can be done.
I think a lot more can be done. I think the only way that we're ever going to make a change is to give people a chance. It's a very Australian sort of ethos of have a go, that you're allowing somebody that may not have the experience but is ambitious and is showing willing and give them a go. One of the problems that I come up against is that if the only people that have the experiences are the white guys, then you're only ever going to hire experienced white guys. So you have to be able to put the ladder up. You have to be able to go and actively go and find these people. They're there, but make your job descriptions less cis male. Make your adverts, put your adverts in places that are in minority or in certain areas, actively reach out. Like, if you do not need legs to code, then make sure that you have some people that can code that come from backgrounds that can't walk potentially, or, you know, you don't have to just put it on Indeed. There are so many communities that are reaching out for opportunities, but you have to adjust your workplace. You have to allow for flexible working. You have to allow for remote working. I think COVID's done a really good thing in forcing a lot of people to figure out how to do remote working, but you have to be inclusive. You've got to make sure that the environment is safe for anybody to come along, and you have to give them a go. It does not mean if they're not working out, you have to keep them, but you have to give them an absolute crack at the title, because until somebody gets that opportunity, the workplace is never going to change. I think without flexible working, I don't know about you, you've got kids. So how do you work a 9-to-5 job if your kid needs to be dropped off at school at 8:30 and picked up at 3? And who picks them up? Like, it's just these small things that would make a massive difference. And certainly over my time, I've found that if you can allow somebody some flexibility, they will give you their loyalty, because they really appreciate that you will give them that flexibility. But it just is good practice to do the best by the people. I've done a lot of workplace salary negotiations and bonus and sort of promotions and even hiring. And quite often, it's not more money that they want, it's the flexibility that they want. Or they want to be able to learn, but they can't afford to do the course that they want to learn. So you can build it into their package that for the extra $1,000 that it might cost the company for them to go and learn a skill, you get a worker that is more skilled. So finding people where they are, instead of just assuming they have to come to you, making job descriptions a much friendlier, open wording that will be inclusive, that allows people to know that they can come in, and making the workplace, while everybody needs to work hard, set your targets, make them clear, and allow people to just get on and do the work that they need to do with some help if they need it, but just let them do their work in the way that will get the outcome that everybody needs in the time frame that works for everybody. So I think we just are a bit of a way from getting there, but certainly in the startups that I'm meeting, they're doing better, certainly from even sort of 10 years ago when I started in, actually about 13 or 14 years ago now that I started in startups. But it wasn't inclusive then. It was always white male. I didn't have any females that were female founders, and everybody was like at the kitchen table, and if they were lucky enough, they would make something bigger. You know, women weren't getting any funding. I think, you know, as it's changing, venture has to change. Startups have to change. Everybody's got to put the ladder down and stop just prizing the experienced, but also welcome the inexperienced trier, if you like, that will absolutely turn out to be golden because you've put the ladder down.
I think that's a hugely powerful vision and framework that people can start using immediately. You know, to summarize, you know, look for people where they are, not forcing them to come to you. Make sure that you bake in flexibility and take into account the fact that not everyone can do things in exactly the same way as you can or I can maybe. And, you know, to give them the chance, right? Give them the chance to succeed, help them through if they fail. And, you know, and if they aren't right, that's fine. You can always move on, but, you know, at least you are taking the right steps to bring them back in. And I think I would echo so sincerely what you said around how COVID has accelerated some of that and made it more, I wouldn't say made it easier, but open people's eyes to kind of where the challenges are. You know, I know for one, I've been really fortunate that I've been able to spend more time with my kids because I've been working absolutely from home for the whole time. And I would not give that up for the world now. I think it would be really, really very, very difficult for me to even think about going back into a 9-to-5 type environment or a, you know, a commute plus office kind of environment. But equally, some people need that, right? So to your point, you've got to find ways of ensuring that if someone needs or wants an office, or they need that kind of ability to get out of the house because otherwise they're stuck in the house all day, then there is that opportunity, right? So no, I think as you say, we have a way to go, but we're getting there, right? Bex, it's been absolutely incredible having you here with me today. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Where can our listeners find you? Are you on LinkedIn, on Twitter? Where's the best place for them to look you up?
LinkedIn is probably the best bet. I'm Bex Armstrong on LinkedIn. You need to send me a note, because if I don't know why you're linking in with me, I probably won't link in with you. I am on Twitter, Bexaloid. I'm on Instagram, Bexaloid. But you probably, I'm not very social. I look, but I don't talk much. But you can definitely find me on any of the socials. I'll pick it up if you wanted to have a chat or just to, you know, shoot the breeze. I'm always around for people that need some help or need to be pointed in a different direction.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Bex. Have a great day.
Thank you. It's been lovely to chat with you.